Welcome back to the ACSI podcast. That's the Academy of Clinician Scientists and Innovators. In this episode, we will be discussing the topic of collaboration, particularly between clinicians and other scientists and innovators. It's no secret that it's very difficult to do anything by yourself nowadays, and collaborators are very important to move a project along. Today, we have Associate Professor Rinku Dalan, Senior Consultant Endocrinologist at Tan Tock Seng Hospital, where she works mainly on diabetes and its complications, and her work spans the NMRC Transition Award in 2014 and the CSA in 2018. And, of course, Assistant Professor Christine Wong, who is an Assistant Professor at the Lee Kong Chain School of Medicine. Both Professors Rinku and Christine have been collaborating for a long time. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us. Yes.
Maybe we can start with Professor Rinku. Rinku, can you tell us a bit about your research interests and what you do?
As you know, we all see patients with diabetes, and when we see them, what we are telling them is you need to control your blood glucose. But most of our patients, they are asymptomatic. They don't feel anything. Mm. And they ask us as to why they need to control their blood glucose. And what we tell them is you need to control it so that we can prevent vascular complications. Complications like heart disease, retinopathy or blindness. However, they ask us, what does my blood vessel health look like right now? Can you tell me what it looks like? And we have no answer to that because we are not really looking at their risk in an objective manner, nor are we looking at the impact of the ongoing metabolic problems on their blood vessels. So in order to look at that, we want to look at research to advance this so that we can give them an objective measure of what is their risk today, and we can give an objective method and how the risk is changing over time by looking at their blood vessels. We also want to develop personalized interventions to help reduce the risk over time.
That's very important because I think patients really need something tangible to latch onto. And how about you, Christine? Can you tell us a bit more about your research?
Yeah, sure. I have a research background in metabolic and vascular biology, as well as neutrophil-mediated inflammation and diseases. So when I was in my postdoctoral training, I found that neutrophils from individuals with diabetes, they are more prone to release their chromatin. So that forms something what we call as NETs. These kind of NETs are very highly pro-inflammatory and pro-coagulant. So these NETs can lead to diabetic complications that include delayed wound healing, diabetic retinopathy, and sort of other complications too. When I become independent in Singapore, I'm very keen to understand why diabetes will make our neutrophils or diabetic patients' neutrophils more prone to NETs. And then what is the impact in metabolic diseases and conditions? So through mechanistic and also target discovery studies, our lab aim to develop new therapeutic strategies to combat NET-mediated diseases. So because neutrophils is also one of the early immune cells that arrive at the sites of stress and damages, so we would like to explore whether there's any potential for neutrophils and NETs to serve as predictive marker for diseases as well. So here you can possibly see that Rinku and I are really a natural match in our research interest. Yeah, and direction.
Yes, definitely. I mean, all the vascular complications and everything can be explained by your NETs and by the immune profile of diabetic patients. Can you tell us about how your collaboration came about? Maybe Rinku can start.
Okay, yeah, so our collaboration started when Christine first presented her NETosis work in diabetes mouse models at LKC. When she was presenting her work, I could see that we have synergies in our work. And we have a common vision to study inflammation and inflammation in diabetes, especially in diabetes. Like, what is different in diabetes in terms of inflammation? And if we could use those inflammation markers as predictive biomarkers and personalized treatment to reduce cardiovascular disease, that would be great. After that, we met up to discuss as to how we could work together. And at that time, she hadn't even joined LKC.
Yes, and I would say that I still remember vividly the day I met with Rinku in her office. That was just my second visit to Singapore, honestly. And then we share about each other's research interests and our expertise. To us, human samples are very precious and critical resources because my lab mainly work on preclinical models and cell-based studies. It's very relevant for us to look into whether the findings are also in patients, and that makes the question like relevant to reality, right? So I would say that having been able to connect with Rinku before I officially set up my lab in Singapore has helped me to plan ahead. I have a bigger picture, and I also know what other possibilities that can I have here. Yeah.
Yes, so I think that was quite fortuitous. How did it feel to meet someone that had research interests aligned with yours? I mean, it's not every day that you see, you know, meet a clinician that seems to have a subject that is so close to your heart.
When I was in US, I already kind of like use human samples quite often. We do human sample analysis. But when I first come in, I know we can always have set up our lab with animals and cell work. But at some point, I'm concerned that where should I like get these like findings validated? So I think one of the thing is it's also through like school connection, I would say, because on my schedule, literally, I already saw, oh, Rinku is one of the clinicians that I will meet this time. So before I meet, actually, I also look up Rinku's profile, and then I said, yeah, instantly we can have some of the synergistic like ideas or projects already. So to me, I think it is a very crucial resources, and also it is also a blessing that in a place that is totally new to me, I can find such a collaboration to like enhance the research and differ from both sides. Mm.
And how long was it since your first meeting that you start working on a grant together? Maybe Rinku can answer that.
After Christine came here, she had a grant and seed funding because she's a Nanyang assistant professor. And her initial project, she needed some samples to get on with doing her pathway studies for NETosis. And that's when we started working together on a project.
Yeah.
And actually, Rinku is very fast and prompt in responses. I still remember, I think not long after I joined, I also wrote another small grant to sit for like endeavors in studying more molecular or mechanistic like aspects of NETosis using human samples. And then I just wrote to Rinku, hey, would you be someone that can provide this? And then I think I just got her reply in within 1 hour. So I think that is because initially we already met and discussed. So then when there is like opportunities coming up, one can really add fast to link up or to think of who will be interested in the work as well.
Professor Rinku, how else have you found the collaboration with Christine beneficial?
Collaboration with Christine has not just been a scientific collaboration. It has also been a friendship experience.
Of course, yes. Yeah.
And it is through this friendship that we are able to see our common vision. And we have developed many grant proposals after that one. And in fact, the latest one, we are trying to do neutrophil phenotyping using one of her markers to actually decide on treatment options. And that grant has been funded by the Tenoto Medical Research Fund, and which is a very prestigious award. And I think we were able to put up this grant proposal because of our close friendship and trying to work together.
I know this might sound a bit personal, but do you take the science like out of the institutions? Do you ever like meet for coffee very often? Do you come up with a lot of ideas? And how do you bounce ideas off each other?
We meet out for coffee, not just coffee. We meet out for lunch, dinners as well.
Wow.
And Rinku got like, she also very generous. She also introduced other like team members in her institution, TDSH. So the collaboration is actually not just one-on-one. I would say through Rinku, we also see many other common possibilities or interests as well. Rinku started a journal club as well. Usually, we try to bounce ideas of research projects, what we can do in all of this. I think not reaching out because just of a project, but discussing another or latest findings in the literature or in the field, what people can do as well. So I think these are all very precious connection opportunities. Yeah.
Yes, well. All right, so and what barriers do you think there are to cross-institutional collaborations?
I think one of the main barriers is that the fact that we are in two different institutions, so we have to kind of cross certain contractual requirements that are necessary. For example, we can definitely share ideas, which we do very freely with each other. Not just with each other, we have actually a group of people who we meet together, and we do meet regularly. But when it comes to exchanging samples or exchanging data or writing papers together, we need a contractual agreement. And sometimes these contracts can take very long to actually execute. Although I have to be honest that we have streamlined our processes and it's not that difficult anymore.
Yeah, I mean, everything seems so nice on the napkin at the restaurant, but you know, once the RCA comes about and everything is such so complicated. I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, and Christine, how about you? What barriers do you think there have been? Maybe not with Ringu because it sounds like you guys have had quite a good collaboration, but maybe some other collaborations that maybe didn't work out the way you thought.
I would say first, I think the legal like part that Ringcrew talk about is very real. And actually, I think LKC and NHG, or even with Ringcrew's P2B program, streamlining is really helpful in all this sense already. If we are talking taking the cross collaboration or cross institutional collaboration out for barriers, I think sometimes it is also about knowing who are interested and where they are, and actually the priorities that lie similarly. Sometimes it is easy to see people who have common interests, but because people they have different portfolio to manage as well. So like being able to align with priorities is something also very precious, I would say.
Okay. What ways do you think we can improve this? I think Ringu has already touched on it that the administrative side has streamlined the process and it's quite pain-free now. But are there any other ways you think we could make collaborations happen more frequently and less with less hassle?
I wanted to add to that that I think it is important to have dedicated programs within the institutions. So what has helped us is we have a dedicated program that Christine was just mentioning called the P2P program or the Personalized Cardiometabolic Risk Management program. So because we have this program, we have a few clinicians all come together with a common vision, and we have a few scientists at LKC Medicine and NTU with a common vision, and we can meet regularly, and we have streamlined the contractual agreements between us and many other things that we require in terms of regulatory requirements. So it becomes easier for us to collaborate. If there is someone junior who wants to start new, it is a good idea to hook on to one of these programs because they can help you connect to the scientist and they can help you streamline the processes that are required. Because in the modern world, there are too many rules and there are too many new rules every day and too many new things that we need to do before we can collaborate and exchange data. So if we have these kind of programs that have streamlined them, that can help everyone else as well.
Christine, how about you?
So just now I mentioned knowing who are there and where they are actually will be essential. So I think attending retreats, research days, workshops, or networking events actually can help extend the circle of collaborations. As Rinku pointed out, I think one of the things is about referral from peers too. So I would say referrals help me a lot as well. When I have a question, usually I talk to my faculty or clinical colleagues. If they are not the person who have the expertise, they will provide me with some context as well. I think that is one of the very good way to hook up with investigators, and likewise, I'm being connected through all this as well.
Yes, of course. And you know, attending things like Rinku's Journal Club, where you are tossing ideas around, I think things like that are very important too. Okay, yeah, well, thank you very much, Rinku and Christine. Do you have any other advice for young investigators looking to collaborate or looking for a scientist or a clinician who has their research interests? We've mentioned things like the P2P program, journal clubs, attending seminars. Are there any other ways you think that out-of-the-box ways maybe that we could, you know, connect?
Okay, I think I have one more advice for the juniors, and that is not to feel bad when you get a rejection. So I think what happens is most people fear rejection, and because of that, they do not want to approach the scientists that they see at the seminar because they are afraid that their idea will not be taken so well. So My advice is don't worry, just go and talk, go and find out. The worst that can happen is a no, but the more you talk to people, the more you network. It may be in a seminar, it may be in a journal club, or it may be in any other setting, or you might just look them up and just write an email to them. But those may be starting points to start your research in any area.
Absolutely. And how about Christine? How about you?
Yeah, so I would say I'm more junior, so I'm still also learning in collaborating with others as well. But from my experience, I would say that it is an absolute pressure when you met with people who have similar research interests, complementary expertise and resources, and then that would lead to possibilities of co-developing research questions and studies. One thing I think complementary expertise is something that I would really treasure, because you really pick on each other's strengths and clear blind spots, sometimes as simple as study design. You think it is straightforward, but because, you know, no patient will be naive to drugs. So with like close collaborations that I would say people are free or like feel safe to ask questions, no matter is naive or what, it is very important. When just now I mentioned about like collaborators having similar priority, I would say the commitment also would keep things rolling more easily. So if people are committed, it's easier to reach out and discuss about project progress, most importantly hurdles, and then the alternative solution, and even what the next big thing that one can be done. So I think the final line is sometimes, as what Rinku was mentioning, I would say collaborations often come with mentorship and friendship. So yeah, I would say like what Rinku mentioned, just go for it. Yeah, don't think too much, get a starting point.
Yes, yeah. I think that's all very good advice. And with that, I'd like to thank both of you for joining me today on the podcast, and congratulations on your recent grant. I look forward to seeing what you two come up with in the future.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the ACS Hire podcast. If you want to reach out to us, our email is in the description that accompanies this episode, and you can get us on all your podcast programs, including iTunes, Spotify, and Pocket Casts. Thank you, and I'm Dr. Etienne Wang, and I'll see you next time.